Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a November 25, 2008 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. Tonight we have a very interesting program. This is a follow-up to an interview that was done previously about Peter Sumarek and his zero amp technology. We have a couple people who have been eyewitnesses of this device, and one of them is Kirk Miller, who's a retired commercial pilot from California. And let's see if Kirk isn't with us. Hello, Kirk, are you with us?
Hi, James. How you doing?
Oh, very well. Welcome to the program. It's been about a year and a half since we were first on the air together talking about Paul Zagouras and his claims to having produced a phenomenal electrolysis device.
Yes, I think it's been a little longer than that, hasn't it?
Well, we wish it were longer. Unfortunately, the evidence is that recent.
I built a Zagouras cell and did it just the way he said and tried all kinds of different frequencies in it. It didn't put out enough gas to run an engine, that's for sure.
No, and that's why you gave it to me, and I have it in my basement.
Well, I made several, so I gave you one of the ones I made.
Okay, well, and I do appreciate it. It's a nice museum piece. Now, we're hoping that the technology in question tonight is not a repeat of that kind of disappointment. We would like to welcome another person who also was present to see Mr. Sumarek's device, and perhaps you met him, Tom Thayer?
Yes.
Okay, I believe Tom is with us now. Is that right? Tom,
yes,
are you with us?
Yes, I believe I did. If he'll review me on his look, there were about 10 people in the garage, so.
Okay, well, let's see if Tom isn't with us. Are you
okay.
There, Tom?
Yeah, I'm here. I was the short guy with the brown glasses and the striped sweater.
Oh, and you went off to Aptos.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How was Aptos?
That was to visit my brother, and I had a great time.
Good.
And I
it was nice meeting you there.
Likewise. In fact, when we're off the air, I would like to get your phone number because I have some questions for you.
Certainly.
Okay, so folks, what we have here is we have a retired commercial pilot from the West Coast of the United States, and we have, Tom, you're an engineer, aren't you?
I'm an architect by profession, but I've been working in alternative energy technology since 2002.
Okay, and you're on the East Coast of the U.S.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you guys traveled to Mr. Sumarek's house and to his garage to see a live demonstration of his zero-amp technology device. And so that's the purpose of us coming together tonight, to discuss what it is that you saw, how it impressed you, and what the possibilities are for this thing. So who'd like to start out describing what they saw?
Well, Tom was there first, so he was there when I got there the first day. I spent 2 days there examining the technology. But since Tom was there, let's let him start out, and then I'll put in my two bits.
Okay, Tom, could you repeat those impressive numbers that you came up with based on what you saw demonstrated?
Right. Well, I watched Pete take measurements on both the input and the output. And have you described the system setup yet?
No, why don't you do that for us, please?
Okay. It was run off a 4-kilowatt generator that put out 240 volts. And
a gasoline generator.
A gasoline generator,
okay.
Right. And coming out of a 240-volt plug were these tiny wires that were, my guess is around 30 gauge, like you would see in the telephone wiring in your home. And that was running into this motor controller. And then coming out of the motor controller were these very heavy gauge wires, multi-strand wires, that were going to a terminal block, and then the terminal block split it to run five different motors. There were these five motors, there were two of them were 7.5 horsepower, and three of them were 2 horsepower each. So there was a total of 21 horsepower motors that were being run by this device. And I watched as Pete took measurements of both the output from the generator. It was drawing 0.000241 amps, which is less than 0.25 milliamp, It's an extremely tiny amount of current at 240 volts. And the current coming out of the device itself was 16.7 amps at 240 volts. So I worked the math, and it came out that it was drawing 500ths of a watt and putting out 4,008 watts. And if you do the math on that, it comes out to a COP of somewhere around 70,316.
And COP standing for coefficient
of performance.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a heat pump that will put out more heat or cooling energy than is required to run the pump for the heat pump. This is a similar thing. But most heat pumps run, anywhere from 10 to 20 COP. And Tom Bearden and John Bedini have mentioned that some of their devices have had a COP of around 100. And I've never come across a device in which the COP is up in the tens of thousands.
And you said the COP of this was what, 7,400?
70,316.
Oh, 70,000?
Yes.
Wow. And so this is a ratio of power in and power out. Is that it?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Now, an electrical engineer with the proper instrumentation might find a discrepancy with my figures, but I don't think my figures are that far off. I'm not an electronic engineer, and so there may be, you know, some factors of magnitude off.
Okay,
but,
well, we might add for those who don't know you, that whereas you're not an electronic engineer, you have gone to the lengths of building a Bedini wheel. So you are interested in this kind of technology and have been for some time.
I've built a Newman motor and a rotoverter, and so I'm somewhat familiar with new energy technologies that involve electronics. But
yes.
I can't sit down
and this is Kirk. If I can just jump in for a minute, I can confirm those input-output figures. I looked at the instruments as they read it off, and so that is correct.
Okay, so we have two fairly intelligent and technically minded eyewitnesses from both coasts of the U.S. who rushed in to see if the claims about this device are legitimate, and you both walked away feeling that this technology is for real.
Well, I would put a caveat on that. I'm trained as a mechanical engineer from my school days, so mechanical engineers look for actual usable power. You've got to do something with your power. So let me back up just a little bit here. The genset was a Champion genset, which was a hand-started genset. It had a 4,000-watt peak power and a 3,500 running power with that 240-volt plug. And the motors that were running was a Stirling 2-horsepower, two late-model Dayton 2-horsepowers, a GE 7.5-horsepower, and a Lincoln 7.5-horsepower.
And these were not three-phase motors, right?
Some were and some weren't. Maybe Tom could answer that.
I'm not familiar with which ones were three-phase and which ones were not.
No, nor am I.
But it wasn't necessary to use a three-phase motor then.
That's correct.
At least some of them were single-phase.
That's
he
correct.
Talked about them as if they were three-phase motors, but he didn't specify each one, so there's no way of positively saying that they were all three-phase.
But if you add up the amp draw for all those motors at full load, it comes out to approximately 55 amps. And at half load, which is idle with no load, it's about 27 amps.
And one other thing that we haven't commented on was the fact that these motors running for several minutes did not even rise above room temperature as far as heat goes, right?
That's correct.
Stone cold.
And the wires leading to them as well, both the thin wires and the heavier wires.
That's correct.
Cool.
And
that's
even the heat sink on the variable speed controller was also cool to the touch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And let me mention something about that AC controller. I'm not that familiar with AC controllers and AC motors, so I just copied the number off of it. It was a UNI 12202LV, which was the number on the side, rated at 16 amps and 24 amp overload for 60 seconds. So that was the controller that was used. And listening to Pete talk, this controller is not that popular with technicians in the U.S. because it's quite a complex controller. But it can be programmed, and Pete, of course, understands that beyond any normal understanding, and that's what he does. So this controller was his trick.
So this technology is all about reprogramming an AC variable speed controller.
That's correct.
It had nothing to do with a generator. It had nothing to do with the motors that were being powered by the device. It's all about what's inside that box, right?
That's what Pete says. If Tom can verify, that's what Pete says. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth.
Well, this is what I got from Pete, and he said that there's modifications to the electronics. There's programming that's been added to it for security purposes. And there's some superfluous electronics to throw off anyone who tries to de-engineer it. This is to protect his prototype, and this is not what he hopes to put into production, but simply to protect himself until the day comes that it does get into production.
Yeah. Okay, I've done something similar. I've surrounded myself with piles of junk so that no one can find any good device that I might have buried under all of it.
Very clever of you, James.
Well, I buy high and sell low in the stock market, so how's that? So the second day, I went 2 days. On the second day, it's a 100-mile drive from my house, and I got there about 10 o'clock. And we had quite an entourage of people in this field there. There was Sterling Allen, Dr. Stephen Greer, James Dunn, Todd Hathaway, Ken Rasmussen, and then Tom's friend Nick, and a couple others came in and out, and I didn't really get their names. So there were an awful lot of friendly people looking at Pete's technology, which is a good thing, and I think he has a lot. He's surrounded now by a lot of friendly people.
There's another element that has helped him protect it, and that is that he has several of these units dispersed around the world and protected by individuals who know the code and who know the electronics. So if anything were to happen to Pete, his technology would not get buried with him.
And this is the makings of a great action movie where someone sends out hitmen to take out all those units, you know?
Right, yeah.
But now, do you want to hear the criticism by the mechanical engineer?
Yeah, let's hear it.
The motors were sitting in the back of a truck spinning with no load on them, and so I was watching these motors very close as they were started up to see what the acceleration time was, which is important. And they accelerated fairly rapidly, between 2 and 4 seconds to get up to speed, and you're talking big, heavy AC motors. It takes two men to handle some of these, so it's quite an impressive display. But being the mechanical engineering type and wanting to get power out of this thing that you could do something with, I wanted Pete to take and load up one of these shafts. Now, there's no way I was going to grab a shaft because they're all keyed shafts and you can take a finger off because the momentum of the motors is enough right there. And an unloaded motor, as I understand it, draws about half the amperage of a loaded motor. Someone could correct me if I'm wrong on that. So the amperage that was drawing was probably 16.7 amps, and those motors were using it to idle. However, when I asked to load one of the shafts, Pete had a hissy fit, and he didn't want to do it, and I was kind of insisting on it. And the other people standing around thought I was being a little bit of a hard-nosed about it, but you can't just sit and look at idling electric motors. You've got to test them under real loaded conditions. And so Pete jumped up in the back of the truck with some plastic braided rope and was going to put it around one of the shafts. And he was complaining about it. And I said, Pete, there's something wrong. And he said, yes, it could throw off my my electronics and everything is on timing, and my AC controller is looking at each one of those motors, and if I slow one of them down, I may ruin something. And so I backed off, and I said, oh, that's okay, Pete. And so then I'm looking for the answer on this, because you have a device that's not usable in the real world to run something.
Yeah, I mean, and I would rather have shut off all the motors but one and put it under load.
Right, but it may take more than one motor to run it. In other words, my theory is that this electricity is being generated by the motors themselves and used by the motors themselves, which is a pretty neat trick, and getting the signals from his box. Because there are such a thing as negative transistors, and you can get energy straight from the ether. But, boy, this one, is you're talking dynamite ratio there with 70,000 to 1. And so it just doesn't fit that the AC controller is putting out that many amps. So then as we talked, and Pete had an album there with pictures in it, and I'm looking at it, and a big part of this invention is he calls it a transmission, but under the strict terms of a transmission in mechanical engineering, it only transmits power, and it's got a loss in it, probably of 3% or so, and it could be a hydraulic transmission or straight mechanical, gears, pulleys, whatever. But his transmission added power to get to, the way I understood it, it took the load and kept the motors on speed until the motors adjusted to the load. And so that's a really fancy transmission, and for a guy to do that in his garage is just phenomenal. And Pete has done two of them. He's had two previous demonstrations of this technology, one for Ross Perot's company, or companies, after he sold EDS Systems. And he did another one for a company down in Waco that disappeared after they looked at this technology. So a big part of this invention is that power transfer unit that takes the load onto these motors. So it sounds to me like the motors are very sensitive to speed, and they probably won't start under a load either. So for a mechanical engineer, I would ask Pete to say, you know, what's it going to take to do a practical demonstration to get back to your point with the transmission there, with your magic transmission, so that you can demonstrate usable power. Okay?
Well, that's reasonable.
And then the second criticism is that I asked him about three times, do you have to run the motors on this power? Will it work with just a different kind of a load? And unfortunately, we didn't have any devices in his garage that used 240 volts. So there was no test of just testing that amperage out of his AC controller. You follow?
Yeah, in the interview that I did with him, he said you could run virtually anything off of this.
Yes, I would want to see that. If that is a true statement, wowie zowie, this is great stuff.
Okay, now, also in his interview with me, he mentioned a Russian physicist by the name of Chernetsky. And there's a page on the Internet, if you type in or do a Google search for Chernetsky's plasma generator, there's an article by Bruce Perrault that gives a description of this technology. Now, in his interview, Pete mentions that Chernetsky was capable of getting about 700 watts out. And that was
all. I remember that.
So, you know, there's a question of what are the similarities or the differences between Chernetsky's approach, which is explained in a little more in detail. There are several patents that can be looked at also. There's a website called New Energy. It's nuenergy.org. And they have several patents, one of which was just a patent application that was approved November 6th
of
this year. So we're talking something that's only a couple weeks old.
Is that the website of Bruce Perot?
Is that, when you say Perot, you weren't talking about the Perot who ran for president?
Yes.
Oh, you were?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this Perrault is Perrault, actually. It's P-E-R-R-E-A-U-L-T. Perrault?
Yeah.
I suppose someone might pronounce that Perrault.
What is that, newenergy.com? With
yeah,
a hyphen?
nuenergy.org.
Just all together, no hyphen.
All together, yes. nuenergy.org, newenergy.org. There's a patent application here that has to do with a alpha fusion electrical energy valve. But the interesting thing is that this site mentions this Russian physicist that that Pete mentioned as having been an inspiration for his device.
Plasma technology is what I'm most excited about in this entire field. It's where the ether meets the real world, and that's where the transformation into real energy happens. Pulsed, very high voltage, very high pulse rate DC spark gaps produce energy.
Yeah, are you on that same page, Tom?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'll get on that later.
I mean, is Tom, are you in agreement with that observation? Or is Tom not with us? Okay, apparently he's... Let's see, Tom, are you still there? Okay, he must have been taking a break or something. Well, go ahead, Kirk. So you feel that a spark gap, a simple spark gap, which is sort of similar to what happens when you pull a spark plug wire off your spark plug of your engine and allow it to fire to ground. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. However, it's got to be very high voltages and very high frequencies. This is what Tesla was messing around with. And then T. Henry Murray and... the Correas up in Canada, they're probably about six or seven devices that have worked off of plasma energy. And then now you have black light power. Where are they?
But there's no evidence that Pete's device, his AC variable speed controller, is doing anything along this line, right? There's no spark going on inside there.
That's why the plasma statement confuses me.
Or is there? Is there an actual tube, perhaps?
Have no idea.
Inside of one of these AC? I'm sure we can get a hold of a schematic and see if there is.
I don't know.
It's possible that inside an AC variable speed controller there is a spark gap.
A couple other interesting things about this is that Pete wouldn't allow anyone to put an oscilloscope on his AC controller, and I don't blame him. He's worked really hard on this, and it's a good thing, and so he doesn't want someone to see what kind of a waveform he's putting out.
Now, he did mention in his interview with me that a less expensive oscilloscope wouldn't have revealed anything anyway. He said it takes a rather expensive one to even be able to see what's going on.
Yes, yes. And one little a strange thing happened is that little hair-like wire that was coming out of the generator blew out. It failed inside of the... wrapping in several places, and so he had to replace it. And believe me, this was hair-like wire. I think it was even finer than number 30, so it was really fine wire. And then the other little nuance is that others and I noticed that when he started his motors up, it actually put a load on that generator. You could hear it skip a beat. Like you were turning on a switch in a house and some heavy appliances with the gen set, you know, when that happens?
Yes.
It'll readjust itself?
Right.
So it did do that. Even though it was drawing such small milliamps, it did react to the load that was going on it, even though it was not connected through a large wire and it was only drawing milliamps. So, and then the cold running is strange and wild. So even though I'm not satisfied with the mechanical engineering aspect and nothing practical happening, Pete needs to be brought along with it, and if I think he's willing to look for investors or partners or whatever, and it looks to me like the first step is a practical demonstration, and he's confident he can do that.
Now, but there was some implication that he already has done that, but I think there may have been some misunderstanding. For instance, I was under the impression at first that the U.S. Army had actually used his technology to replace 57 gallons of diesel fuel with, you know, a few gallons of gasoline in a day's time.
That was all on that first interview of Pete.
But
Pete
apparently
was quite
that never
forthright,
happened.
I think that
was all theoretical. It wasn't an actual military use out in the field.
Well, I don't want to put words into Pete's mouth. I think what happened with his Army thing was the Army wanted to look at it, and then a company, it was given to a private corporation to look at, and the Army never did use it. That's what I think happened.
That was explained in an article that's posted on the Internet.
Yeah.
But the implication that I had picked up was that there had been a military use and that there was a successful demonstration of a generator running on it. So there's a little bit of ambiguity there.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. There needs to be a practical demonstration of the stuff actually working.
Yeah, and I think that's coming along. The other fellows that were there, Dr. Greer and certainly James Dunn and Todd Hathaway and Ken Rasmussen, Sterling Allen, they all want to see this stuff happen, as well as I do, and all of us, and Tom and his friend Nick. So this will be well vetted and tested, I hope, and soon. It gives me great optimism.
Well,
is Tom back on? Tom back there? He must be listening at home.
I'm still here, yes.
Okay,
and
good.
I wanted to add one other thing about the running of his device, and that is, I asked him if he had had it running in a closed loop, and he said it does run, and he has had it running in closed loop, but he wouldn't rearrange the setup to show us during the weekend that we were there. So,
now, how simple would it have been to have run in closed loop? What would have been the simplest way to have hooked it up in closed loop?
Well,
you're going to need an electronics expert, but if all he needed was 240 volt feed into his AC controller, that's what those. You could put a small generator on one of those motors that was running.
Okay, I mean, are we to understand that the very generator that was being propelled by a gasoline engine could have been hooked up by a belt to the
That's not practical, but you could go down and buy a generator, an off-the-shelf 240-volt AC generator, and hook it up to one of those motors.
Okay, that's
it doesn't have to be a high amperage.
Yeah. Okay, and that would so you might need to start it on the gasoline generator, but then you could disconnect that and run it off of the generator that's being driven by one of the motors.
Yes, and several times Pete was asked that question, and he said, well, I could use the regular 240 volts from behind the clothes dryer over there, but what he likes is his pickup truck is mobile. He can show people out in the field, and so he keeps it on the generator in the truck, and that's the only reason it runs off of the generator.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm sort of gun-shy about some of these devices because when I was a teenager, an old man sold me a Red Devil spark booster. It was a little red device that you stick into the middle of your coil. You know, it had like a coil wire end sticking out one end.
That rings a bell. That takes me back.
You push it down into your coil, and then you connect your coil wire to the other end. And basically, I think it had a series of little plates inside it, little washers or something, and the spark jumped across all those gaps, and so it supposedly intensified the spark, and it's supposed to increase your gas mileage. And so he hoodwinked me into buying not one, but I bought a whole box of them, because I thought, well, I'll sell them. I don't know what happened to all those things. I may still have one somewhere. I wish I could find one. But
hey, Tom, are you still there?
I'm here, yes.
What's your gut feeling, Tom? Is this as good as it looks?
My gut feeling is that Pete is for real and that his device is for real and that he's come upon something that's totally amazing. But, all of us are vulnerable to deception, and you just never know when that might occur. I tend to feel, because I listen to people with my heart, and my heart can tell me when somebody's, usually, when somebody's being dishonest. Not all the time, but usually. And listening to him with my heart, I personally feel that he's legitimate and that he's telling us the truth and that he's stumbled upon an amazing gift. And he considers it a gift. He says it's a gift from God. And it was given to him with complete understanding. And I've come across several individuals who have made remarkable contributions to society who have had the same experience, that inventions, men like Walter Russell, for instance, and Tesla, who were given complete ideas so that they didn't have to sit down and figure out how to do it. All they had to do was make it. And that's the way that this came to Pete. So,
I pretty much agree with that concept,
you do.
Tom.
Yeah.
That's a good description. It's not without obstacles, however, and any devices like that to get it out to the public.
Right.
It's going to take hard work and money.
But basically, doesn't this change our whole theory of how AC motors should be operating, how they should be powered?
Well, I just got an email from the my electronic technician, and he said, watch out, three-phase motors and 240-volt AC motors can idle in between the phases so that they can idle without needing any electricity.
So you'd be cutting their power requirement by...
Well, they can't take a load. They're just spinning. And I don't quite understand it, but he says power companies do it all the time. They'll put an AC motor on idle in between phases, and it's not drawing any energy at all. And another thing I got today from my electric, this is Ron Klassen. He's quite adept with electronics and electricity. Balder Motors just came out with a motor. It's called IPM technology, and it's from 1 horsepower to 500 horsepower AC motors, and they measure up to 98.6% efficiency. This is available now.
But your comment about...
Stuff is happening.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Tom.
Your comment about the motors being able to idle between phases without drawing power doesn't stand up to scrutiny, because we watch them in idle mode drawing 16.7 amps, and that current draw had to be going somewhere, and the only place I could see them going was into those five motors.
Or out of the five motors and into the controller.
Yeah, I know this electric, he's a mechanical engineer, actually, professor at University of Kentucky, and he agreed that some anomalous things could come out of a brilliant mind, because he said AC current is not used up like DC is in a motor. It's basically a vibration. He said there's room to tweak it. He said, however, I will tell you this, that you can take your meter, those who don't have digital meters, the old spinning kind of meter, he said you can put some kind of resistor in there, something to cause it to spin backwards. So there are some tricks that can be played with AC current,
mm-hmm.
and you wouldn't want to fall victim to some kind of trick, you know.
Well, let me close by...
Kirk has
yes.
made the proper suggestion that the true test of it would be running things under load to see how the system behaved. And that's one thing that, although you might say that running five electric motors, a total of 21 horsepower motors on idle is a small load, there may be an argument against it, as Kurt was suggesting. The true test, I think, would be running one or all of those motors under load, or any other kind of electrical load, like, for instance, perhaps a halogen light or some light source that required heavy voltage, heavy current.
I thought he said he used light bulbs.
Yeah, he did, and he repeated that several times. It was like 300 watt light bulbs and about 100 of them It was a huge load.
But you all didn't see that demonstrated. You heard about it.
No, we didn't.
So the theory that there could be some backfeed from these motors actually providing power would not be possible if you were using light bulbs as the demonstration.
Well, no, unless you were driving a generator off of one of those motors.
Yeah.
So that's why Tom and I think we both agree on the fact that a practical demonstration of actually doing something is the next step.
Yeah, well, very good. Well, thank you both for joining the program and helping people around the world who are very interested in following this technology. At least they have a couple of eyewitnesses who have come out and said, here's what we saw and here's our interpretation of it.
Could I make a closing comment,
sure.
James? I live closest to Pete than all the other gentlemen that flew out from all over the country to see him. So I will gladly be a go-between, and if someone has a chore to go do to see Pete, I will gladly do that and give up time to do that. So I'm here to help. I want to see this move forward, and even though I criticize it for not having a practical demonstration, I'm hopeful that this is going to go.
Well, one thing we do have to agree is that no heat was produced as these motors were spinning.
Oh, quite amazing.
And that is anomalous in itself.
Yes, it is.
Not only that, but the motor controller that comes with a huge heat sink on it. It's 12 inches long, 8 inches wide, and about 4 inches tall. Aluminum finned heat sink. It showed no heat whatsoever run the way he was running it.
Yep, it was quite amazing.
And it was actually rated at lower amps than what were being drawn by these motors, right?
Yes, I think I saw 16
I think you said
amps.
It was rated at 16
yeah.
amps, and these motors were pulling 21 amps or something?
Well, no, 16.7 was coming out in the outwire on the AC controller.
Okay.
Right.
And that was its rated amperage?
Close to it.
Where's my note here?
Something. I think you said it was 16
amps. Yes, it was rated at 16 amps, 24 amp overload for 60 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
And he did have
maximum amp over maximum amp rating in which you can run a continuous load, and there was no heating. You don't find that in any other electrical configuration that I've ever come across.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. And another odd thing that Pete stated about that AC controller, that it didn't know an overload because that input was so low, it just didn't understand. And so he said he's loaded it way up on the output side. So that's another anomaly.
Okay. One more question. Did you guys see any evidence of any patent applications while you were there?
I could answer that. Pete has 14 different patent applications in all different kinds of names, and they're under process, but he's going to hold them at their level of progress through the system and not go any further at this time, is what he has stated.
So they are in process.
He was going to keep them in patent pending until he had firmed up an agreement with a financial interest that can take them to market.
That's what I heard.
Very good. Well, thanks so much for sharing this information, and we hope to have some favorable follow-up on this story in the near future.
Okay. Keep up the good work, James.
All right. You guys take care.
Thanks a lot, James.
All right. Bye. Everybody have a good day. Bye-bye.